particulars alleged as reasons for my detention, there follows here a copy of the particulars, which were alleged to be reasonable grounds for my detention for the last 3 years. It will be seen that the whole basis of every one of them is that my opposition to communism, Bolshevism and world Jewry was but a sham, a disloyal ruse, in fact, adopted to mask anti-British activities in relation to the war. Anyone conversing with doings in the House of Commons will be more or less familiar with the anti-Bolshevik activities that I have kept up openly and consistently all through my time in the House since 1931, and which activities became anti-Jewish in 1938, when I realized that Bolshevism was Jewish and an integral part of their world plan. The framer of these particulars brushes aside the whole of that 8 years' record, and proceeds to fabricate and reiterate some new and disloyal purpose, for which slanders he offers no shred of substantiation. Telephone. Regent 4784 Ref. R4. Home Office Advisory Committee, Defense Regulation 18B, London, W.1. 24th June. 1940 Reasons for order made under Defense Regulation 18B in the case of Captain Archibald Maule Ramsey, MP. The order under Defense Regulation 18B was made against Captain Archibald Maule Ramsey, MP because the Secretary of State had reasonable cause to believe that the said Captain Archibald Maule Ramsey, MP had been recently concerned in acts prejudicial to the public safety or the defense of the realm, or in the preparation or instigation of such acts, and that by reason thereof it was necessary to exercise control over him. Particulars the said Captain Archibald Maule Ramsey, MP. Particular 1. In or about the month of May 1939, formed an organization under the name of the Right Club, which ostensibly directed its activities against Jews, Freemasons and Communists. This organization, in reality, was designed secretly to spread subversive and defeatist views among the civil population of Great Britain, to obstruct the war effort of Great Britain, and thus to endanger public safety and the defense of the realm. Reply: the formation of the Right Club, as the attached memorandum shows, was the logical outcome of many years of work against Bolshevism, carried on both inside and outside the House of Commons, and well known to all my political colleagues since 1931. The main object of the Right Club was to oppose and expose the activities of organized Jewry, in the light of the evidence which came into my possession in 1938, some of which is given in the memorandum. Our first objective was to clear the Conservative Party of Jewish influence, and the character of our membership and meetings were strictly in keeping with this objective. There were no other and secret purposes. Our hope was to avert war, which we considered to be mainly the work of Jewish intrigue centered in New York. Later, I and many others hoped to turn the phony war into, not total war, but an honorable negotiated peace. It is difficult to imagine a body of persons less capable of being subversive as this particular suggests, and coupling this charge with the charge of being defeatist places this whole particular in the realm of the ludicrous. Particular 2. In furtherance of the real objects of the organization, the said Ramsey allowed the names of the members of the organization to be known only to himself, and took great precautions to see that the register of members did not leave his possession or control, and stated that he had taken steps to mislead the police and the intelligence branch of the War Office as to the real activities of the organization. These steps were taken to prevent the real purposes of the organization being known. Reply: the real objects of the Right Club being the declared objects, and there being no other objects whatever, the latter part of this particular is pure fabrication. There was only one respect in which our aims differed from the police and MI, namely, the Jewish question. Neither police nor MI recognized the Jewish menace. Neither had any machinery for dealing with it, or for withholding information from Jewish members of their personnel. If names of members of the club had been placed at the disposal of either of these departments, they would have been seized upon by the Jewish members therein, and reported on to the very quarters from which many members wish them to be withheld. Particular 3. frequently expressed sympathy with the policy and aims of the German government, and at times expressed his desire to cooperate with the German government in the conquest and subsequent government of Great Britain, replied, "The latter half of this particular is a fabrication so preposterous that I propose to treat it with the contempt it deserves." Lord Marley embroidered this fiction in the Lords a few days after my arrest, insinuating that I had undertaken to be Gauleiter of Scotland under a German occupation of Great Britain. My solicitors at once invited him to repeat his remarks outside. Needless to say, he did not do so, for there is not a shred of justification for either this particular or his slanders. The term sympathy with the policy and aims of the German government is misleading to the verge of dishonesty. It suggests some general agreement or understanding. Nothing of the kind existed. I have never been to Germany, and beyond one formal luncheon at their embassy knew no Germans. What little I had learned about the Nazi system did not appeal to me. I have never approved of the idea of movements on distantly similar lines being formed in Britain. On the contrary, I disapproved. My view was that the Unionist Party, once enlightened, was the body best suited to take the needful countermeasures to the Jewish plan, and that to do so successfully it did not even need to go outside the powers latent in our Constitution. In a general way, my views concerning German aspirations coincided exactly with those expressed by Lord Lothian in his speech at Chatham House on 29 June, 1937. When he said, "Now if the principle of self-determination were applied on behalf of Germany in the way in which it was applied against her, it would mean the re-entry of Austria into Germany, the union of the Sudetendeutsch, Danzig and possibly Memel with Germany, and certain adjustments with Poland in Silesia and the corridor, the only aspect of the Nazi policy which contacted in any special way with my views was the opposition to the disruptive activities of organized Jewry. No patriot, British, French, German or of any other nationality, is justified in abandoning the defense of his country to that onslaught, once he has recognized its reality. To confuse sympathy on this one unloyal point with sympathy with the whole Nazi policy and aims is dishonest. To develop this fallacy into a charge of preferring that system to our own, and being prepared to force that system, of which I disapproved, upon my own country, is the last word in infamy. Particular 4. After the formation of the organization, made efforts, on behalf of the organization, to introduce members of the organization into the Foreign Office, the censorship, the intelligence branch of the War Office, and government departments, in order to further the real objects of the organization as set out in I hereof." Reply. Again we have here the fabrication of a wholly unjustifiable charge of a secret and disloyal purpose, already dealt with in particular I, and my memorandum. In regard to the matter of members of the Reich Club and government offices, I would say this, the objects of the club being to spread as rapidly as possible the truth concerning the Jewish danger, time was always a vital factor. From the outset we were in a race with the Jewish propagandists. To counter them in as many different spheres as possible was obviously the quickest method. 10 members in 10 different spheres would spread our information more widely, more quickly than 10 members all in the same office or club. Every political group must follow these lines. This method is the common practice of all political parties. I never at any time made any effort to get any member a job in any government office. If a member had a choice of 2 jobs, and didn't mind which he or she took, and asked me about it, I should clearly have replied that as far as the club was concerned, the sphere in which we had no member to preach the gospel was the one to choose. For the knowledge to reach such places as the Foreign Office, War Office, etc., was obviously to achieve the enlightenment of influential persons most rapidly of all. Particular, after the outbreak of war, associated with and made use of persons known to him to be active in opposition to the interests of Great Britain. Among such persons were 1. Anna Wolkoff, and 1, Tyler Kent, a coding officer employed at the Embassy of the United States of America. With knowledge of the activities in which Wolkoff and Kent were engaged, he continued to associate with them and to make use of their activities on behalf of the Wright Club, and of himself. In particular, with knowledge that Kent had abstracted important documents, the property of the Embassy of the United States of America, he visited Kent's flat at 47, Gloucester Place, where many of the said documents were kept, and inspected them for his own purposes. He further deposited with the said Kent the secret register of the members of the Wright Club, of which organization Kent had become an important member, in order to try and keep the nature of the organization secret. Reply. I have never at any time of my life associated with persons whom I have known to be in opposition to the interests of Britain. On the contrary, my whole record proves that I have devoted more time and trouble than most people to fighting just such persons. I certainly did not know, and do not now know, that either Mr. Kent or Miss Wolkoff were engaged in activities calculated or likely to harm the interests of Britain. From my own acquaintance with them both, and conversations I have had during that period, I know they both recognize the activities of organized Jewry to be one of the most evil forces in politics in general, and one of the most dangerous to the interests of Britain in particular. All their actions will have been directed to countering those powers and their designs, and most certainly not to anything that might injure the interests of Britain. As for myself, I should like to add here most emphatically, in view of various mendacious allegations on the subject that have since reached my ears, that I have never, and of course could never contemplate communicating information to enemy quarters. Having reasonable cause to believe that the Jewish international intrigues to bring about total war radiated from New York, and knowing that activities were being carried on to sabotage Mr. Chamberlain's policy of pacification and to bring about his overthrow, it was my obvious duty as a member of Parliament, and one still loyal to Mr. Chamberlain, to make any investigation I could. I deposited the Red Book of names of the Wright Club members at Mr. Kent's flat for the period of my absence from London only after I heard of several persons who had had their papers dealing with the same sort of subjects as mine ransacked by persons unknown in their absence. As I have stated already, I had given explicit assurance of privacy to some of the persons whose names were entered therein. Have their names even come into the hands of the British secret police, personated as this force is by Jews, their attitude vis-à-vis the Jewish menace would have become known at once in the very quarters from which they made a particular point of their being withheld, namely, Jewish quarters. Political burglary is no new thing in this country. When one is suspected of possessing information relating to the activities of organized Jewry, Lord Craigmile, when Lord of Appeal, had his whole house ransacked, every drawer broken open and every paper searched without anything being stolen, at a time when it was reasonable to suppose that his papers contained such matter. The Chief Lieutenant of Police in Edinburgh declared at the time that it was a political burglary. The perpetrators were never traced. See the letter of Lord Craigmile, dated 6 July, 1920 entitled Edinburgh and Freedom, published in Letters to Israel. 6. Permitted and authorized his wife to act on his behalf in associating with, and making use of, persons known to him to be active in opposing the interests of Great Britain. Among these persons were Anna Wolkoff, Tyler Kent, and Mrs. Christabel Nicholson. Reply. There's no truth whatever in this particular, and I propose to treat it with the contempt it deserves. Needless to say, the Home Office Advisory Committee produced no evidence to support any of the slanders contained in any of the above particulars. Conclusion. I submit this statement, and the comments on the particulars, not for my own sake, but to enlighten the country. When things reach a stage wherein a Lord of Appeal, whose papers are suspected of relating to the plan of organized Jewry, can be politically burgled, when a white paper containing vital passages on Jewish world Bolshevism can be immediately withdrawn and reprinted omitting the vital passages, when a leading British industrialist can be blackmailed by organized Jewry and coerced into submission by boycott, strikes, acts of sabotage and arson, When a member of parliament, who dares to try and warn the country against this menace of organized Jewry and their helpmates, the only fifth column that really exists in this country, is thereupon in prison for 3 years on false charges, when these things can happen in Britain, then there must surely be something wrong somewhere. At a time when Britain and the Empire are engaged in a life and death struggle, surely there can be no room for the foul teachings and activities which I have touched upon. While our sailors, soldiers and airmen are winning victories over the external enemies, surely it is the duty of every patriot to fight this internal enemy at home. The Prime Minister, in his speech at the Mansion House, stated that he had not become the King's First Minister in order to preside over the liquidation of the British Empire. There are more ways than one of encompassing the liquidation of the British Empire today, and the national leader who is determined to counter them all will not only need the utmost support of all patriots, but I believe it will be proved that his most formidable difficulties will emanate from just those very powers which I and other members of the Right Club have all along striven to oppose and expose.